So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea's deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it. Come on, let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
What's up, everybody? I've got a special podcast for you today. I've got one of the greatest journalists in Overlanding with me to help conduct this podcast, and I have the holy grail of interviewees here. You think you're an Overlander? You think you're a nomad? You think you're a traveler? Well, I'm about to show you what the bar is that's been set in this world. I'm going to tell you about a Guinness World Record Overlander. Her name is Patty Upton, and we're going to cover her story. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Philip. I appreciate being here. I appreciate you being here. I enjoy everything. I mean, I need the exposure to get our story out there, and it's been a great opportunity to be here and meet the people at this Overland Expo.
Okay. Before we get started, I just want a little personal. I already knew who you were, had done homework on you. I was looking forward to going to the presentation that you did. And I'm not a crybaby type person, but along with the other men that were there, I cried too when I was listening to your story, and I wasn't embarrassed. It's an amazing story. I know you're focusing on possibly having something written about it in a
Correct.
Book or whatever, but I think your story needs to be a book and a movie.
Well, I'll be happy with a book for now. I mean, if we get a movie, that's even better. A documentary would be nice, but just to get the story out there of what Lauren and I did with our Jeep is what I'm looking for.
So let's go into that.
Okay.
Where were you born and raised?
New Jersey.
Okay.
But my dad was military. So, and the only reason I always said I was traveling before I was born. My mother was pregnant with me at Camp Pendleton, California. Dad was shipped overseas the end of the Korean War and ended up in Japan. And her mom flew out from New Jersey and took her pregnant with me back to New Jersey. So that's why I was born back there. Dad was military. Every 3 years we had our bags packed saying, okay, we're ready. Where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in North Carolina, Virginia, Florida, overseas in Okinawa. And then when he retired from the military, we ended up in Panama. And I thought, oh, I'm in my heaven. I was last 2 years of high school, eternal summer. I loved it. I'm an outdoor person. Just being outside down there was just my cup of tea for being able to live outdoors. I mean, that's what you do down there.
And what about your husband? Where was he born?
He was born in Riverside, California. Mm-hmm. He was a desert person. Heavy construction was what he did for a living. Freeway overpasses in Southern California. But he was just total opposite as far as what he was used to deserts. I was used to jungle. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, some of my, because I had information I could give him. That, when I first met him, I was able to give him some information and send him in the right direction to get more information for his original trip through the Darien Gap. And then later I joined on this particular expedition. I was with the right state of mind to finally say, yes, I'm going to step through that looking glass and make that first step, and I'm going to go. And did it.
So you mentioned jungle training. I know a little bit about that, so I would love for them to hear about that.
Well, I am a Girl Scout, actually. I'm a lifetime member, but at the time I was a senior Girl Scout, and we had the opportunity there in Panama. The U.S. Air Force runs a jungle survival school down there that at that time, or prior to that probably, all the astronauts went through. All the pilots did, all the astronauts, they all had to go through this, especially during the Vietnam era. This was their training facility. And the Boy Scout post that was sponsored by the survival school opened the opportunity up for senior Girl Scouts and Girl Scout leaders to take the week training course that the Air Force put on for their people. The only thing we didn't get to do was jump out of a helicopter. They wouldn't let us do that. We were kicked out of a boat instead. We had two days of classroom training and then 3 days of living off the land in the jungle, making your own fire, making your own structure, looking for your own food, that sort of thing.
And how did you and your husband meet?
Actually, my ex-husband introduced us.
Wow. There's a story in itself.
Yes.
I told you this should be a movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the second podcast coming.
Yes.
Second podcast.
Stay tuned. But wait, there's more.
Yeah, right, dot, dot, dot.
Lauren showed up in Panama driving a 72. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And this was late 75, but he was driving, I think, a 72 Ford F-250 pickup truck. And dual rear wheels on it, painted red. He said he carried every spare part imaginable, but everything that broke he didn't have. So, when you see somebody like that arriving in the canal zone in Panama with California license plates, you're thinking, oh my God, this guy thinks he's going through the Darien Gap. He thinks he's going to drive to South America. This guy's nuts. And so my husband flagged him down and said, look what I found. And with our background with jungle survival and contacts we had with other people, with experts with jungle, we were able to put Lauren in contact with people, medical stuff, that sort of thing, and kind of pointed him in the right direction to get information. So that was my first encounter with him was for a few days in 74, 75, whenever it was, when he was down there on his first trip. Years later, I was separated from my husband, and when Lauren arrived in Panama in 84, I then realized, okay, now I'm ready for something like this in my life, at least for 30 days. I wasn't actually giving up my job. I was going to go just for 30 days. Mm-hmm. We all thought we were going to make it through in 30 days. We thought it was going to be a 30-day trip. Little did we know. So I arranged for someone to take care of my job for me for 30 days, and I went off and did 30 days with them. That didn't work out. We did 34 miles in 30 days, and that was nowhere near getting anywhere even near. We were still 18 miles from the Colombian border. And so I went back to my job in Panama, and Lauren stayed with the Jeep down in the Kuna village of Pucuru in the Darien Gap. I'd have the missionary pilot fly supplies down to him. I'd make up care packages for the natives for him to deliver to the natives, and then he would not charge me anything to fly the supplies down. And Lauren said he watched the bananas grow in the rains fall for 9 months.
Wow. 9 months. Yeah. Think about
that's
that.
That's a long time.
9 months.
Yes.
That's a long time. Some people's complete travel history is less than 9 months.
Oh, yeah. Some people are 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, I couldn't have done it. I think I would have been stir crazy. He was pretty close to stir crazy.
Wow.
I mean, he worked out a trail that he could run and do, you know, he had places he could do some athletic or exercises. He swam in the river. You know, he had that. But as far as anything else, he can't talk to the natives. He doesn't speak Spanish. They don't speak English.
Oh, there's no Netflix down there.
No,
that kind of stuff.
Nothing. So. Nothing. And it had to be hard, I'm sure. I don't know that I could have stuck it out for 9 months.
Wow.
So what was the process of you and your husband coming up with this whole idea?
Well, it was his dream originally, and that was to take one American-made vehicle around the world on a north-south course, all by land, except for the South Atlantic. There's a land route from Puto Bay, Alaska, to the tip of South America. There's a land route from South Africa to Norway. The only problem, and where the real expedition comes in, is between Panama and Colombia. There's just no road.
Right.
Everywhere else is a road. Even parts of Africa that we were in, there were other cars that had traveled there. I mean, it's not like we were the only ones. And I have to say that the Darien Gap has been crossed by many other vehicle expeditions. When I say many, you can count them on one hand practically. Yep. But there have been vehicle expeditions through the Darien Gap, but they have all traveled a great distance by river. They'll come to a difficult section and they'll go around it because it's too difficult. You come right to the end of the Pan American Highway at Yavisa, and first thing you're faced with is a river. Then you're faced with 4 miles across a point of land and another river. So a lot of the expeditions would get to that point and then barge around that area and start at the other side of that 4 miles at the town of Pinogana and go from there instead of driving the 4 miles.
And how many miles are the total?
We clocked it at 125 miles.
Wow.
And in that, we did that whole trip entirely on land, 741 days. Think about that. Count that out.
741 days.
And it was 125 miles. And that's another thing, is other vehicle expeditions, they all say it's 80 miles. Well, yeah, but they didn't do the same section we did. We
right.
did not
yeah.
We did not travel by river. We literally did not travel the rivers. We would make sure we hired natives. We were lost the whole time. Don't ask me where we were. If it wasn't for our guides, who knows where we were. They were the only people that knew where we were. They would find the route. They would make sure Margarito was our guide, and he knew how to find a place where we could load the Jeep onto a dugout at a river and make sure that we could get off just opposite that on the other side of the river. Not go up 500 feet, not go down 10 feet. We wanted to cross that river. And we used a variety of methods to cross rivers. We used dugouts lashed together and planked. One village, the Choco natives in the village, actually built a balsa log raft for us. It was all pegged and grooved. There was not a nail or a rope holding that raft together. Drove the Jeep on, and it must have been...
That's old school.
Your heart, heart kind of did this when you drove on.
No 16-penny nails holding any raft together, and there are fording rivers. That's
and the Jeep is heavy. And we crossed the river, and then there was, later on in the gap, we ran across a river that was in an area that nobody lived. There was no balsa logs to be found, and it was in an area that was close enough to the Otrado Swamp that when the swamps would fill, this one particular river would come up about 5 feet. We were there fairly close to the end of the dry season, so the river was quite low in the fact that it was about 5 feet deep, but it was 30 feet across.
Huh.
Jeep doesn't have a snorkel. So Lauren, being a bridge builder by profession, said, we're building a bridge. So we spent 2.5 days. And I always say we, mind you. I'm probably writing in my journal most of this time, or photographing. We spent 2.5 days chopping some trees. Lauren gave him about the size that he wanted, had to be really straight, had to be a certain length. Man hauling them to the river, and then using the Jeep's winch and a snatch block, we're able to pull them across the river. We cut down the banks, laid these logs on, then lashed a roadway across the top of that. Now, we did use rope on this one because Lauren was there. if he'd had screws and bolts, he would have used those, but we didn't have that. So, yeah, we did use rope, and we drove across the river. The river was the Boca Chica. We drove across the bridge, across the Rio Boca Chica.
I love it. Wow. I love it. I love it. So, could you briefly tell the viewers exactly why you're in the Guinness Book of World Records?
We got the Guinness Book of Records for the first all-land crossing of the Darien Gap by motor vehicle for doing it all by land. I mean, I can't take away these other people that have done it. It's just that that wasn't their goal. That wasn't what they set out to do. Lauren was the type of person that when he said, I'm going to take one American-made vehicle around the world on a north-south course entirely on land, that's what he's going to do. He's not going to fudge here. He's not going to fudge there. This is what he's going
to
do.
Okay. I wanted to make that perfectly clear because I'm a big fanboy of all of this exploration and traveling and everything. And there's been a handful of people who have tried to, say that they've done the same thing you've done. And I wanted it to be clear that that's not true.
Exactly. Everything I stipulate is it's all by land. That's the only difference we have.
And that's a big deal.
We crossed rivers. Yeah. We didn't travel them. Yep. And everyone else, I mean, there's some expeditions. I think the British, they did probably over 100 miles going, hit the Rio Trato, and I think they went all the way down to Turbo. Mark Smith, I don't know if, I think they came up from Turbo. I'm not too sure exactly what they did. I don't remember their route. Portion of it. It's got plastic on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure to...
Yeah.
You can hold that up for the...
Oh, here. Yes.
Let's hold that up, actually.
And if you can't read that...
It's sprinkling right now.
Yeah, it's trying to rain again.
Didn't want that to rain on the...
And she hasn't budged.
Just wanted to make sure that I didn't know there was plastic on it. I didn't want the Guinness Book of the actual
record
to get rained on.
So... I think we better speed this up.
Yeah, I don't know what this is going to do. Let's hope it doesn't do Friday.
Okay. Okay. I know, gosh. Friday was torrential rain and hail all day long, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we're hardy folk.
Exactly. I don't I've always said I don't shrink, you know.
Yeah.
Or melt, you know. It's one of those things. Unfortunately, I'm not going to melt. But
so what do you think of the event?
I love it. I'm having a great time. Little damp and muddy on Friday, but fortunately yesterday was absolutely gorgeous and it's now drier as far as the mud goes. I'm not a mud person. Living in the tropics and then introduced to desert, give me the desert any day.
So I'm kind of going to rearrange the order of my questions to make sure certain ones definitely get done before the weather.
Sure.
This is the vehicle you went in, right?
That is it. It's a 1966 CJ5 made by Kaiser Corporation.
So I don't see any 45s on it. I don't see Rotopax.
No.
You couldn't have taken this.
Yep. It just recently entered the 21st century in that it has a cigarette lighter outlet for a charging port.
So,
I love it.
Would it be safe to say it's not about the gear? It's more about getting out there and doing it?
It's all up here. It's here and in here.
Got it.
You make it work here, you can make it work there.
Thank you.
So well said.
Yep.
Thank you.
So well said.
Thank you.
Hallelujah.
Yep. You know, this generation is very, very gear-centric. And I'm sorry, I am a little bit too. But a lot of people forsake the actual adventure for another piece of gear.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I you are the perfect example of why that should not be the case.
Yeah. I'm camping now in my truck. It's a Dodge. I had a little box built on one side that is for my bed. It has an area at the tailgate end that has a porta potty in it. We're Hilton quality here. I mean, I'm right there. A storage area underneath the bed portion. And I have an ice chest. Mm-hmm. I have a chair. I haven't opened the chair. I haven't taken the chair out. I sit on the tailgate.
Miss Upton, what is the dynamic? I interview a lot of people, couples that go on trips, but nothing like this. What is the dynamic of a husband and wife going on a trip like this?
You definitely get to know your spouse when you're sitting shoulder to shoulder in a CJ5. For 24, or sleeping in a CJ5 24 hours a day. I mean, you're together 365 days. I mean, you're there. You're traveling, you're camping, you're moving, you're camping, you're moving constantly. And then you throw in once we got out of the Darien Gap, you throw in the border crossings and the regulations and the hoops you have to jump through. We always thought we should develop a Monopoly game called Border Crossings.
That would be a good one. Yeah. I'd like to play that.
Yeah, if you don't get this stamp first, you get that stamp first, you got to go back and get this one stamped.
One of the orders, exactly.
And then you got to pay this guy. So yeah, we always thought that would be a fun game to develop. But anyhow, so you throw in the politics that go with it, or then, you know, do we need... visas for here? Do we need visas for there? Is the carnet up to date? Because at that time, we got the carnet through AAA. I'm not sure it's even available now through the United States. I don't know what people do for carnets other than going outside the U.S.
Do you want to explain to our viewers? Some people might not know what a carnet is.
It's sort of like a passport for your vehicle. What it's done is some countries require this. You put up X amount of dollars depending on the value of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And then as you enter a country that requires a carnet, and then this is within our time, whether it's changed or not, I don't know. It's a fairly large booklet, and each page is divided in thirds. As you enter, your carnet is stamped where you entered, and they tear that page out and keep it, and they stamp the other side. I think they stamp the top of all three, and then they keep a page. And then as you leave the country, you get that second page, that perforation stamped, and they get the stub stamped. So then they pull out that piece. So eventually the entry and the exit meet up. They say, oh, they imported the car, they exported the car, good to go, don't need it anymore. we had a problem in South Africa, of all places. We came in at South Africa, we were stamped in, and we were stamped out at Botswana because they're on, they at that time were on relations with South Africa because of the apartheid government. When we got to Egypt, 6 months later, we got to the embassy and picked up our mail. There was a letter from AAA saying they were going to attach the account because our car had not been exported from South Africa. The piece that Botswana stamped never met up with the piece that South Africa stamped when we entered the country. There was just that gap there. And so we had to have the embassy, U.S. embassy in Khartoum, write a letter stating the vehicle is physically right here. You can't do this. Right. And that's the only reason we got through that. Otherwise, we would have lost the money that was put up.
Wow.
And side note on Egypt that's kind of fun. The carnet, Egypt requires a 300% at that time deposit of the of the price of the vehicle.
300%.
Wow.
And Lauren wasn't going to pay it. You know, he said, I'm not going to pay that. So in big red letters on the cover and on every single perforated page of every page of this carnet is stamped not valid in Egypt. Big red bold letters in English and French. Okay. We held our breath as we entered Egypt. Fortunately, no one read English or French. They spoke English, but they didn't read it.
Oh my goodness.
They never, never, I mean, we literally held our breath until we were stamped in. That's fine.
Wow. So, I think the angels were watching over you there.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We've always said that. You know, it's always been one of those things. We got the right guy at the right time checking us in. I don't know, but yeah, whatever it was, it all came together and we got in the country without having a hassle. But yeah, the carnet was a big part of everything and making sure you paid it up and made sure it was current and got a new one every year or whatever the requirement was.
What have been some of the biggest challenges? What are the what have been some of the biggest challenges as husband and wife? Being there 24 hours a day, 365, no matter where you were in the world. I mean, I could imagine sickness been one of them, but what about some of the others?
Yeah, Lauren was fortunate. He was never sick. I got sick, and he was phenomenal with me because, again, I had told Mercedes some stories about some of Lauren's previous trips. His first trip into the Darien when I first met him, a man that was with him was shot and killed. And that all, it was, no one knows what happened. It was one of those mysteries that's never been solved. It was an American that was with him. And that really bothered Lauren because he, you know, he asked this guy to go with him. It wasn't that he coerced him or he wasn't a 19-year-old kid. He was an older man. Mm-hmm. But he was shot and killed. Then on one of Lauren's previous trips, or after this one, he lost a Jeep over a cliff. And he had picked up two French hitchhikers, and young girl and a young French guy, both of them French. And the roof was soft, ripped off. Anyway, it was night, went over a cliff. When Lauren found the girl, she was unconscious. He thought he'd killed her. And it just devastated him because he thought, oh, my God, I've killed somebody else. You know, somebody else on my watch has lost their life. And he was devastated. In Africa, I came down with the malaria and maybe dysentery, and I was very, very ill. We didn't know what it was. We were in Sudan, had no clue what it was. Nobody could tell us. There was, you know, nothing. We had stopped at a construction camp run by a Greek company. I don't know what they were constructing. I was not feeling. I had a high fever and just terribly sick. And they said, well, get her to Khartoum. And it was still a couple of days to Khartoum. Get her to Khartoum, and here's the card for our head office in Khartoum. They'll take care of you. So, and I have to read Lauren's journals to figure out what went on, because I really don't know. He made up the bed inside. I was laying down. He arrived in Khartoum and parked at a park under some shade trees. This is in June. And, or maybe late May, anyway. Hot, no matter what, in Sudan. And he showed the business card to a taxi driver. And he said, I want you to take me there and I want you to wait. And so he got to that place, talked to these Greek people. They said, okay, we have to get her and get her to the hospital. They talked to the taxi driver to find out where Lauren was parked because he didn't know where he was parked. He just pulled into the first park he could find that had shade trees. And they took me to a small hospital in Khartoum and it was diagnosed as malaria and maybe dysentery. So he was once again beside himself, has he done something to cause somebody else? And, you know, it was one of those things, no matter what I said to him, I volunteered for this. This was my choice to go. No one held a gun to my head and said, you're going to do this.
Right, right.
This was my choice to be here. This was my choice to do this. And but he always had that feeling of being responsible. He was always in that, he always had that mentality. He was always one that was the caretaker mode, the, being the responsible one. And he was definitely always the one that would have the last word or the last say in whatever decision was being made. It wasn't that he wouldn't listen to anything I would say. I would suggest this or suggest that, or and he would listen to it and say, well, yeah, we could do that and that'll work out. Or no, that's not going to work because we need to do this. Now, when it came to working on the engine, it was like, don't touch anything. Let me get the book out first. He was not a mechanic. So, yeah, it was sometimes he wanted to just kind of dive in and start tweaking things. And I kept saying, no, just step back. Let me get the book out and see what it says. let's go at this calmly.
Right.
So I ask everybody this, but getting the answer from you is just a whole nother level. What's your favorite type of landscape or geology to travel through? Is it sand and or yeah. mountains or
desert? Yeah, probably not so much of the sand dunes. The sand dunes were a little spooky for me in Sudan, and mostly Sudan. Egypt, we were on a tarred road. Sudan is where we had. Sudan was spooky when we left Khartoum, because we're just following tracks in the sand. I mean, I literally thought we were going to run across Abdul's used car lot. I really did, because we're following these tracks all day long. We're following these tracks. They go up a sand dune, make a loop, and come back on themselves. And I was like, okay, crap. That didn't work. Where do we go from here? So we're following our nose more than anything else. It was just, you know, you're following tracks, and that didn't work. Our compass no longer works. So it was just, you know, the Nile River flows north. Kind of keep that in sight, because mm-hmm. we know that's where we need to go. And that was it. And so it was good. I mean, it's clean camping. I like that, although at times it could be pretty hot. I mean, I can remember camping in the desert when the wind would blow and it would be so hot you felt like there was a furnace 2 feet from you just blowing hot air on you. But I'm not a mud person after realizing that, you know, sand is much cleaner. Mountains are nice in a distance. I like the Four Corners area of the U.S., you know, Moab, Canyon de Chelly, Canyonlands. You give me that area, and that area you could probably spend a lifetime in and never see it all.
Oh, yeah. You look 30 feet in another direction, and the landscape completely changes.
Or the light changes,
yes,
and it's
yes.
just a whole different picture. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy the desert more than probably anything else.
So just for the entertainment of the viewers, I'm just going to open up that same question to you, Mercedes.
Oh, gosh. Depends on what vehicle I drive.
Okay.
It depends on who I'm with, what vehicle I drive, what mood I'm in. I don't know. There's that's a hard question to answer for me. I like rocky terrain, mm-hmm. Driving-wise, if I'm driving, if it's a 4x4. Mm-hmm. I love different kind of terrain. I agree with you, driving in sand, that's always a little weird for me.
Yeah.
I just, off camera, I'm getting more used to, but if it's just crab walking or if it's just something I feel like I can't control,
yeah.
it's still a little hard for me,
mm-hmm.
But I'm getting better at just, you know, kind of conquering my fears with some of the other, you know, 4x4 things that it's just, all right, let me just, you know, work on some of those areas, but I just, there's so much that's out there.
Exactly.
That I just... Any place that's new, I guess that's not anything specific and it's more general answer. But yeah. for me, you know, and Andy's the same way, my husband, it just, we love exploring. We love getting out there. And that's in these vehicles like this, I mean, your CJ5
yeah.
is just the perfect
yeah.
platform. It's, you know, for us, we have our 1995 Suzuki Sidekick, you know, AKA hashtag the Teal Terror. If you look it up on Instagram or if you look it up on Dear the Google, we started out with a two-door, very similar to this in size. You know, we bought it for $1,800, and, you know, the driver's side door was hyperextended. The two crank windows, neither of them came down until we took the door cards off, and kindling, we're holding them up, both of them. And we're like, oh, okay, random, we'll take the kindling out, and we had to drive a couple hours down, and you know, there was a guy that was selling, apparently, selling the used parts to be able to fix the crank windows from a bucket. That's how we fixed everything. But like you know, you and I were talking
yeah.
earlier today, we have different uses for a lot of our gear.
Yeah.
You know, we have to make things dual purpose, triple purpose, and we use our vehicles to go everywhere in all different kinds of terrain. So
yeah.
So all of it is my answer.
Yeah.
Anything new is my answer. Yeah.
And this is kind of corny, but I know everybody wants to know. You've been everywhere, and I normally ask people to give me one, but that wouldn't be fair to you. You probably got way more than one. Give me your three favorite places.
It's hard. It really is.
I gave you three.
I know. For me to be special, the Daring Gap will always be special to me. Okay. I took my daughter down there by boat and to a couple of the villages for her high school graduation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a gift.
That is wild.
So I wanted her to meet the people
that we had
dealt with and been with and the whole bit. So she loved it. And side note, she has also now gone through the Darien Gap. So I'm probably the only mother-daughter team that has ever, had a daughter that goes through the Darien Gap. So the Darien Gap does hold a really big point. And I would literally, if political situation was different, someone said, let's go back in a heartbeat. I'd be down there. Okay. I would be down there. I really would.
Let's do it.
I would. You work it out. I don't want to do the logistics. You work it out. I'm on board.
I'll do the logistics if you do it.
I would love to go back. Wow. I really would.
You heard that. I got that on tape.
I would love to get someone that speaks Spanish to go down there with me and interview some of the natives that worked for us and get their perspective of what these crazy people were trying to do. So that's one of my favorite places. I enjoyed the Middle East. I enjoyed Sudan. I enjoyed Cairo. I enjoyed Jordan. It's just the philosophy, the people, they're all warm. They're all Israel. When we were there with the Jews, they were all just great. They were all, and I don't know, it's hard to say. They were just welcoming, friendly, give you the shirt off their back, help you out any way they can. We've been in places where that is got 100% more than what the people are that we're asking if we can park next to their little hut. And they're saying yes, and then they're coming out offering us food and bread and eggs, and we're saying, you guys are literally scraping together a life, and we're just fine, really. We just needed a safe place to park. So it's the people like that that we run across that make the trip special.
Right.
So that's only two. Well, Middle East is kind of jumped together. Unfortunately, I can't say that Europe would be one of my favorites because, to me, Europe is just shrunk down America as far as traffic, population, people, that whole thing. That's just, it's not my forte or Lauren's. We never really appreciated big crowds. Northern Chile, the Atacama Desert, that was probably another place that was pretty special.
So what made that special?
It was like an alien landscape. There's no vegetation. There's nothing there. Rocks, and not really sand, more of that gravel, and a salt pan. And the freaky thing was, we're out there camping. We got off the highway and, worked our way out, so we're nowhere in sight of the road to camp. And we were with a British couple that were traveling on a motorcycle, and Lauren and the British couple were sitting around the Jeep or something, finishing up dinner, and I excused myself to go behind a rock and use the ladies' room. And I could hear someone throwing pebbles at me. Ping. Ping. And I'm looking up. What the hell is that? And then I realized the sun had gone down and the air was cooling. And it was the salt pan beginning to cool. And it was making these popping noises.
Oh.
And sure enough, the next morning, as we're there outside, you could hear it doing the same thing, popping again. As the sun came up, the salt pan was expanding and it was making these popping noises.
Oh,
and it was like, who's throwing rocks at me?
Yeah.
Give me a moan. I want to pee in peace, And I was like, what is that? And it took me a few seconds to figure out what the heck, because there was no one there doing it.
Isn't it interesting when you're quiet enough and you're in remote surroundings and you just allow yourself to listen to Mother Nature?
Yes. Mm.
It, to me, there's nothing more awesome. Mm. To have that opportunity to shut off Netflix or just detach from Instagram or whatever, or just, your laptop, all that digital, which all of us have to be connected to at some point in time or all the time, and just be.
And the Atacama, like I said, there was no vegetation, so there were no insects, there were no birds.
Oh. Wow.
There was nothing. It was it's known as the driest place on Earth.
Really?
And it's phenomenal in its beauty because of that, I think. And, other people probably look at it like, my God, that's the most boring place I've ever seen in my life,
Wow.
Which, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And to me, it was just absolutely gorgeous. And the Chilean people, again, wonderful people. Everywhere we seem to go.
Miss Upton, I know you feel the rain starting.
Again.
I would love to talk to you till the sun goes down.
And don't worry, I probably could do it.
Me and my normal co-host, in November, we're leaving for the Pan Am. We've given ourselves about a year and a half to 2 years.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
Nothing on the level of what you've done. We have an admiration for you.
Well, thank you.
This was the Holy Grail interview for me. I want to thank you for your time. Is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't know to ask?
Well, I just want to state something because I don't know if it was clear. Is that hail? That was an awful heavy raindrop. I've been talking a lot about Lauren. Lauren's not here. This was also part of his dream, was to share the story of the discovery. Lauren passed away last... I'm going to cry now. Lauren passed away last August. And this is now what I'm doing, is to get his story out to everybody. Because it's a phenomenal story, and I was fortunate to be a part of it. But it truly is... I know it's our story now, but it started as his story. Don't... Gonna get us all. But... it was, all I can say is, get out there. Mm-hmm. Just do it. Make your mind up. Make it work. That was Lauren saying, if it doesn't work, damn it, make it work.
Okay. These are real tears. Because I highly respect this lady. Oh. I highly respect her story. I wish I could talk to her more. You know what I'm going to say, everybody. Stay safe. Tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on the trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.